This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air, Linda Cohen along with you. With all the emphasis on weight in this country, one of the most common questions people ask is how much should I weigh for my age and height? In other words, how do I determine my ideal body weight? We'll hear with more on this is Christy Trumbo, registered dietitian and nutritionist at Upstate's Community Campus. Welcome, Christy. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So many people struggle with this question. I mean, one person's ideal body weight may be completely different from another's. For example, if you are around people in a family who who are very overweight, you might think, "Well, I'm just right. If I'm not quite obese." And the other way is if you're comparing yourself, for example, to a fashion model, you might feel I'm way, way too overweight. So what do you recommend for people in terms of really establishing what is a reasonable body weight for your age and height?
Sure. There's something that we use. It's called the body mass index. And basically it's based on your weight and it's based on your height. And if you want to know what your body mass index is, you can ask your doctor. They would have a good idea of that. Or there's a lot of really, there's free tools where you can use a body mass index tool online. You can go to the cdc.gov and they have it there. But an underweight body weight is under 18.5 as your body max index.
So if you have a BMI of less than 18.5, you're considered underweight.
Mm-hmm. Normal is 18.5 to 25. Overweight is 25 to 30, and obese is greater than 30.
Now, as I was reviewing for this, it struck me that several of the health professionals I came across said that the body mass index is the best way to calculate in terms of whether your body weight is ideal. But some say that it's a little faulty, that it doesn't tell the whole story. Because I guess there are several factors you need to include, including age, muscle fat ratio, of course the height and weight, but even your sex or your bone density. So how do you wrap all of those together with the BMI and come up with this concept?
Sure. I mean, if you were to take a bodybuilder, they may be considered overweight, but they could be healthy. So I think we need to look at other indicators such as lab values. We need to talk about medical conditions such as diabetes, you know. Basically, what insurance companies use is the body mass index, because the higher your body mass index, the more at risk you are for certain conditions such as type 2 diabetes, such as heart disease, stroke, certain types of cancers, osteoarthritis, even pregnancy complications. So we use body mass index because, like I said, the higher you are with your body mass index, the more at risk you are with these types of medical conditions.
So it's kind of a rough ballpark basic standard that we've come upon. But the truth is there are these other factors that play a role. For example, as you said, bone density would affect your weight. And you might be very strong, and you might be a bodybuilder, and you're obviously not overweight at that point.
Sure.
So those are all, you really need to look at a lot of these different factors.
Yeah, and you can ask your doctor, you know, what they think and where they want you to be at as far as your weight. That would be something that you could bring with, you know, that question to your doctor.
And as you said, there are a lot of these kinds of calculators online. Mm-hmm. There are places to go where you could just take a look at it so you know where you stand.
Right. The cdc.gov, they have a BMI tool. And a registered dietitian or your doctor could help you figure out your BMI as well.
And so do you rely on that when you're counseling
patients?
We
use the BMI a lot for insurance purposes. I work specifically with bariatrics, so to qualify for bariatrics, you have to have above a BMI of 35 with certain comorbidities such as type 2 diabetes, sleep apnea, and then over 40 of a BMI to qualify for bariatric surgery. So we definitely use BMI.
So you're considered morbidly obese at that point. Mm-hmm. But the average Joe or Jane, so to speak, do you think it's important for them to understand what their BMI is so that they can have this sense of where their target should be?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with registered dietitian and nutritionist Christy Trumbo. We're talking about how to determine what is your most healthy weight. So, you know, we're talking now about kind of statistics, but in terms of health, I mean, what you said is that when you're in the higher BMIs, they seem to run along with these kinds of disease entities. Right. But it's not always the case.
No, it's not always the case.
So it's not a given. It's not a complete story. Mm-hmm. It's only a piece of the story.
Exactly.
So once you've determined, let's say you've determined what should be your ideal weight, what is the best plan for getting there? I mean, that's the problem. I'm sure you face it every day with your clients.
Right. Right. So it's clear that we know that shedding pounds, it's a smart thing to do, but there's a lot of weight loss products out there. There's a lot of diets and fad diets, medical supplements. It can be really confusing. But basically, a lot of the times what really it comes down to is eating fewer calories than you burn through physical activity.
So is it that simple? You know, all through the years we've heard all kinds of theories about, you know, weight loss. Mm-hmm. But is it that simple as just, you know, calories in, burning calories out?
Yes.
It's really that simple.
It is that simple. Yep. And a registered dietitian can figure out your specific calorie needs, and that's based on your age, it's based on your gender, your height, and your weight.
So those same factors that we were talking about for BMI mm-hmm. actually do play a role in then determining how much in the way of calorie intake you should have.
It's a different calculation. BMI is a different calculation.
Yes,
and
yes.
And then we'll use some of those things for another calculation based on, you know, those factors.
But are there other variables that play a role? For example, if you have a fast metabolism, you know, you always hear, oh, they have a very fast mm-hmm. metabolism. They burn through everything they eat. And there are other people who are they say, you know, they could eat almost nothing and they, you know, everything goes to fat. Mm-hmm. What's your experience?
As you age, your metabolism does slow down because we lose muscle mass. And the more muscle, like men generally have more muscle than women. So that's why men generally tend to have a higher metabolism than women. So that is a factor that does play a role.
So when you counsel people, is there some way to jumpstart your metabolism? That's another piece of kind of hype
exercise.
Out there.
Exercise is wonderful.
So exercise would be...
And making sure you're not skipping meals.
So let's,
protein.
Okay, so let's go through one of the other points I want to emphasize, which is something we talk about all the time here, is this notion of diet. You said there's all these diets out there.
Right.
Some of them, we use the term diet to mean just what you eat. Others have to do with a restrictive diet.
Sure.
What's your feeling about this whole notion of weight loss diets?
I tell my patients to throw that diet word, the D word, out the window. I don't like it because it's temporary. And my approach is lifestyle. This is a lifestyle change. And it's, you know, you want, when you're trying to follow a healthy meal plan, you want to find something that's not restrictive. You want to find something that fits into your daily lifestyle because that's something you're going to follow through the rest of your life.
So you're trying to develop a new normal.
Right.
And one that you can sustain.
Correct.
Because this whole notion of that's why I think so many people have this roller coaster ride mm-hmm. with weight, because they try to go on a diet, maybe they'll drop significant amounts of weight, but before you know it, they're back to their old eating habits and they're back up again, and then they start all over again.
So I usually focus with making small changes. So for instance, if you generally drink 3 cans of soda every day, I'll tell my patients, maybe let's do 1 can a day and try to drink more water, as opposed to eliminating soda altogether. So you're not so restrictive or trying.
Because it backfires?
Yes, it does. You don't want to feel deprived.
Are the sugary drinks a big factor?
They're extra calories. They're empty calories. So yes.
So getting back to what you should do, let's start with what some of the basic concepts are. So to lose weight, to be successful, they have to change their habits, and they have to really think of it as a new normal. So you started to say exercise. So tell us more about how much exercise, what kind of exercise, what's realistic for people?
Sure, 30 to 60 minutes 5 times a week. And that could be something such as walking. Walking is great. And it doesn't have to be 30 minutes all in one time. If you want to break it up, because sometimes 30 minutes can seem very overwhelming. So if you want to do 10 minutes of a walk or an exercise DVD in the morning before you go to work, 10 minutes on a lunch break, and 10 minutes after dinner, that's equally as efficient.
I think that, and is it equally as effective as well?
Exactly.
Wow. I think we've talked about that on other shows we've done, but that's always something that I think people don't really get a handle on. That as long as you stay active, mm-hmm. even if you do it in small, you know, portions, you can. That's as good.
Right, and you want to find something that you like, such as a lot of people love Zumba, water aerobics. If you have, leg issues, you have joint issues, if you really have a hard time moving around, water aerobics, water Zumba, that's a great place to start. Or even sitting down in a chair and getting some cans of soup, some water bottles, and doing some upper body exercises.
So you want to modify whatever your needs are to keep the exercise going. Mm-hmm. How about things like screen time? You know, in today's world, we are so overwhelmed with our devices. I mean, there's nowhere you can go where you don't look around and people don't look at each other. They're looking at their screens. Mm-hmm. How does that impact on weight?
Yeah, the more that we're sitting down and we're sedentary, then we're not burning calories. So if you can try to limit your screen time to under 10 hours, you know, a week, then that would be great. So TV time, computer games, so then you're moving more.
So people who have computers as part of their work life really need to pay attention to the fact that they need to get up and move even somehow through the day.
Right.
So that they don't become, as you said, couch potatoes or sedentary.
Yeah, I mean, even just taking the stairs instead of the elevators at work, if you're going down to the cafeteria or parking far away, you know, in a parking lot, those are all different ways of trying to incorporate exercise into your day, everyday routine.
What about portion control?
Sure.
That's something they talk about. I've heard talked about all the time. And I think there's a lot of misinformation about what is an average or what is a healthy portion.
Mm-hmm. It's smart if you're trying to watch your portions to use smaller utensils. Smaller plates, maybe a toddler plate, may help because visually you feel like you're getting more when you're trying to cut back on the food you're eating. And using smaller utensils such as toddler spoons and forks, so you're taking small bites and you're slowing down at your meals. Your meal time should ideally be 20 to 30 minutes long. And sometimes that's hard to do. So using those smaller utensils can help with that. And on your plate, you want to try to fill up half of your plate of fruits and non-starchy vegetables. The other one quarter of your plate should be lean protein, and the other one quarter of your plate, any type of a grain, specifically whole grain, if possible, and then your low-fat dairy.
So if you have that balanced approach and smaller portions, that generally you're really doing just what you need for your body.
Exactly. You're getting in all of your food groups, you're getting in your nutrients, you're getting in a good amount of fiber and protein to provide you with satiety, you're getting some good calcium for your bones. So it's all those really great food groups.
And so do you really believe in this idea of not skipping breakfast? Is that important?
What I find is that when you're skipping breakfast, then you're trying to make up for it later in the night. So people are eating at 10, 11 o'clock at night, and that's when we're more sedentary. So if you try to get those three meals a day and get it in earlier in the day, then hopefully you don't feel the need to snack later on at night.
So three meals a day still is basically the watchword.
Yes.
So yep. This idea of spreading it out through the day in small little amounts isn't as good as the three meals.
Well, there's certain conditions such as hypoglycemia, some diabetics, they may need a snack in there. And that's something you could talk with your doctor, registered dietitian. But ideally, those three meals a day, like that plate method I mentioned, would be ideal if you don't have any types of medical conditions.
My guest has been Christy Trumbo, registered dietitian and nutritionist at Upstate Medical University. Thanks so much, Christy.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thanks. Very helpful. I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.